numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning, too. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's my little buddy Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number 9. So much more than a producer.
Hey, yo. How we doing?
What's happening?
Not much.
I'll tell you how I'm doing. I'll answer this question literally at face value as opposed to being like, I'm great. How are you? Slow start to Wimbledon. It's grass.
One day.
It's early. It's one of these things, though, where in tennis, there are so many matches, right? Year long, let alone day to day, and a tournament like this in the first round, it's a million matches, right? It's not really a million, but you get the idea. And what you inevitably do is you have edges on a bunch of matches, but you say to yourself, "Self, I can't play every single edge.
Sure, yes.
Let me pick these matches to play." All right, guess who I had to lean on this morning? Cocchioretto. Did I have the onions to play it? No, against Pegula, of course not. The one that I did have the onions to play was yesterday, Talia Gibson against Osaka. That doesn't get home. There were two matches yesterday, Šestović, Sigmund, edges to play, leans to play, don't play them, they get home. The ones you play, don't. So there's a lot of that going on. So I'm not in the greatest mood, let's put it that
right.
way.
We all know this. Everybody's like 78% lifetime on their leans. Like, it just happens.
Todd Wishnev is 97.8%. He's also...
It's incredible how it happens.
Todd is 99.4% when he says it out loud and doesn't bet it himself.
That's rough.
It's amazing. Rough. The kid is incredible on those.
You think
I exaggerate those. My God. On the show today, Mark Borchardt talked baseball with us. Got to get Borchardt in for a Q2 tennis podcast. A baseball podcast. Pardon me. I got tennis picks to give out here. MLB divisions, done or not done yet. And then a little later on, just to pull back the curtain here, here's what happens on the show. Kelly usually gives me some homework on the show beforehand on certain segments, like, hey, let's do certain MLB teams. There are markets to 70-plus wins. Then certain teams, there's markets to 100-plus wins. So a little bit of labor-intensive, so we'll go through that a little later on the show. But some of these exercises don't really result in great bets. We'll see if this does. Last time we did it, it did not, except for a few that I sort of said maybe.
Yep.
We'll see if there's any maybes in that.
I also threw the ones at FanDuel where I caught this morning that actually DraftKings has some posted too. So maybe we can compare odds.
Which one?
Some numbers.
I see what you're saying. That thing you sent me yesterday, I think we should revisit at some point.
Okay.
What I'm referring to is FanDuel has a market.
This is awesome.
Yeah. Last team to get shut out after a certain date, which we just noticed. So we don't have FanDuel here.
I'm going to guess they weren't doing it all season because I feel like I would have noticed it earlier. The one I sent you, like you've noticed, it started on June 15th. I don't know why date.
So did we miss it when it did it come out on June 15th and we missed it?
I guess.
Okay. So, I mean, that would be an interesting one to track at the beginning.
It's a great market idea.
And that would be a hell of a handicap, too, to try to figure that out with pitching rotations and opponents and all that. Anyway, we'll do 70 wins and 100 wins for certain ball clubs. And then Drew Dinsick will join us, talk grass tennis at Wimbledon and anything else that he is betting. Let's start his National Football League bets. What offseason bets has he made? And what rando sports can he offer us? Tour de France? Has that happened yet? No?
No, that's usually like in a couple weeks, right?
So we'll get his thoughts on that.
He's ready to go on that. You know that.
By the way, in case you missed it, I just now was on with Jensen and David Lee Ross, by the way, I believe his full name, David Lee Ross and Jensen Lewis on By the Books right before this broadcast. I have 3 tennis plays left today that have yet to start, in other words. Anna Blinkova, I just mentioned, plus 133. That's a fade of Maria Sakkari. And on the men's side, I'm on David Goffin, a veteran Belgian player, plus 142. Love him on grass in this matchup. And then Alex Bolt is the long shot of the day, 3-1 against the American Ben Shelton. Alex Bolt, one of these rare players who we have over 100 matches of grass data to support his play. A lot of qualies over the years in addition to actual match play and tournaments, live tournament play. So Blinkova, Goffin, and Bolt currently trying to get Siniakova home as a dog. She is in a third set now with Zhang Xinwen, the fifth seed in this tournament.
Yeah, I was watching a bit of that one earlier, rooting yon. And, man, yeah, it was great yesterday. The first few days at Wimbledon were awesome. It was. I mean, I needed some sleep. I got a quality nap in after. Whoa. I forgot to send you the rundown yesterday. I had some tennis on. Mm-hmm. I was watching the Taylor Joe Cerullo Fritz match, and very confused at the ending of that. But it got postponed till today.
Yeah. So the fifth, Dave, and I would say this: Dave Ross made a great point beforehand. In case of those who missed it, the Taylor Fritz Giovanni Bepecci Pericard match. You know Giovanni.
Oh yeah, of course.
Great server, serve bot.
Even good guy.
And great on grass. Maybe. With the serve, especially. They're going to a fifth set. Mepechi Pericard won the first two sets. Taylor came back, won the next two. And Taylor, like, I think he staved off some match points, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Or at least he was down. I think he was down 5-1 in one of the breakers there, and he came back to win it. And then because there's a code ordinance with clothing. Gotta wear white.
Oh, I forgot about this.
And then there's a noise ordinance.
Forgot about the noise ordinance.
Yeah, so part of the deal that they made is we're going to build these two stadiums here, but you still have to abide by the noise ordinance. So at a certain time, so there's like 40 minutes before the curfew, if you will. And so they went to the players. They basically went to the players and said, hey, do you want to continue this or not? And they both have to agree on playing. And apparently Mepechi Pericard didn't want to, which was smart of him, because he's like, I don't have any of the momentum right now. Let's play fifth tomorrow. And then Taylor Fritz got upset because they sort of asked him, and it didn't matter what his answer was. Yeah, so he's like, well, why are you asking me? So great response by Taylor.
Oh, man. Yeah, way to go, Giovanni. Live in that match, because it has not started yet, that fifth and final set. Fritz minus 275, Pericard plus 200. Pericard?
I say Pericard. I don't know.
Pericard.
Yeah. To me, I would play him or nothing. Pericard or nothing.
Yeah, it's one set.
Pericard. Yeah. You get to it. That is likely to get to a tiebreaker. Likely to get to a tiebreaker. So maybe you play that as well. Can we do, because we're going to do a Q2. I was mentioning a baseball podcast, mm-hmm. Q2 baseball podcast. Can I just mention the current first five standings in Major League Baseball?
Fire away.
Because we always like to see if our White Sox thing is in play. Remember, I don't know if you guys know this, Chicago White Sox, not really great at baseball. Chicago White Sox right now, although it's not nearly as bad as it was last year. Let's make that distinction. But the Chicago White Sox, nonetheless, this year, in the standings, dead last in the American League Central, 28-56. That's the worst record in the American League. And the only team in Major League Baseball that's worse than that is the Colorado Rockies. So on a full game money line basis, and we'll get into a bunch of baseball here later, as I mentioned. So on a full game money line basis, right, if you play the Chicago White Sox every single day, whether a favorite or a dog, and usually they're the dog, you'd be hemorrhaging money. You'd be down 10 units, right? It's the fifth least profitable team in baseball. Right. Only the Orioles, Twins, Braves, and Rockies themselves would have cost you more money if you played this bizarro exercise of playing the White Sox each and every game. But as we talked about last year, the thing with the White Sox is the first five bets are almost the exact opposite, because they're actually competitive in the first five. They're often, not often, but almost always a dog in those. And so they end up being one of the most profitable first five teams. It's starting in the sixth inning in the bullpens that things go awry. Well, Kelly, here we are a year and a half into this now. Number one first five team in all of baseball. Again, if you bet this team as a dog or favorite every single game, Detroit Tigers, no surprise. Number two, Milwaukee Brewers, not really a surprise. Maybe a little bit, but not really. Phillies third, great starting pitching, right? Guess who's fourth? Chicago White Sox.
Are you serious?
28-33-17, you'd be up five units.
It's incredible.
And now, keep in mind, there's not a bunch of profitable first five teams. Really, if you're talking about above two units, there's only six of them. And the White Sox are one of them. So anyway, just a little quirk.
Only six of them above two units?
Yeah, there's five teams that are profitable, but it's less than two units. Cubs, Rangers, Reds, Angels, and Royals.
Huh. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, just a little baseball things. It's stuff we do on the Q2 podcast, which will be hopefully later this week. Anything in the NBA that moved your needle yesterday, trade-wise?
Man, it was a lot more active than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I feel like I could say that every day after the day one of free agency. Man, it's an arms race out west. It is. I thought there were a lot of interesting moves yesterday. I'll start Denver-Houston. I mean, Houston just keeps firing away. Dorian Finney-Smith they bring in. I mean, really rounding out that roster. I mean, gosh, they grabbed Clint Capella's heading back to Houston. Like, he's going to be third on the depth chart. There's, like, other teams out there that could use him. That one kind of confused me. But, man, I think he thinks he's signing up on a pretty loaded team, and that's what they're turning into. I thought the Nuggets, Michael Porter Jr., Cam Johnson trade was genius. I think it's... It's what we've come to expect a little bit out of this Denver organization, but I think when you're watching that team during the playoffs, push the Thunder to 7, and there was probably a lot of people like me saying to themselves, man, if this team just had a little bit more of what it had a couple years ago, they are right there with Nikola Jokic on that roster. And you bring back Bruce Brown for basically nothing after he bounced all around the NBA last year, bring him back for almost nothing to put in that backcourt, and then you got... Off of Michael Porter Jr.'s contract, which is the biggest thing here, because if you want to look at offensive numbers, they're pretty comparable to Cameron Johnson. You're both shooting right around 39-40% from three, both great three-point shooters. Cameron Johnson adds a little bit more defense, though, than what Michael Porter Jr. brought to the table, and you're going to save over $40 million the next 2 years. So I thought it was a great, great, great move by Denver. Denver and Houston really loading up.
You believe that the Rockets are justified as the second favorite behind the Thunder?
I think after yesterday, yes.
Wow. Okay. Let's talk some baseball. Which divisions are done, which are not? We'll look into that and more. Let's go City. Come on, get it done. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game live from Circa, Gil, Kelly. Kelly fighting with a app here to make a bet.
Man, thank you, MGM.
And no thank you to someone else.
He ain't stealing $20 from me again, Caesars, to go down there and park. I ain't doing it.
What did they just give you on a minus
220? $55.
On a minus 220 favorite.
On a minus 220 Yankees to win division favorite.
They gave you 55 United States dollars.
$55, yep.
Well, good stuff. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Real Uniform Czar. Just added the Cubs 22-1 on DK most wins July. They're 7-1 on Caesars. Don't love 15 road games, but they should be the favorite in most of those games. Also took a flyer on the Orioles at 60-1, he says, and the Braves at 22-1. They can't continue to be this bad, right? Probably not.
The Cubs was the team I forgot to bring up. That was when I was mentioning the movement. Like, oh my gosh, they really shortened up.
I looked at the Cubbies as well. This is from Brian M. I watched the end of By the Book. Gil's sitting in the correct seat. I go to a meeting, come back, and all of a sudden he's in the wrong seat again. There you go. Still, people are still upset.
Never
going to
get over this. So it's been almost a year. We got to start getting over it, guys.
Ed Fang, the Power Rank, our buddy, says, grateful for the winner from Gil on Katerina Siniakova over Zheng Xin Wen at Wimbledon.
There you go.
Part of a 5-nugget Saturday. I guess it was in his newsletter. He's kind about the tennis. He says, if you're not following me for tennis, you're not doing it right. That's very nice of you. But... it's been a choppy open to Wimbledon. I can't really say that it's been awesome. I mean, that was a good win, no question, this morning on Siniakova, which is a holdover from yesterday. But for every win, there appears to be a loss. So we'll see. We'll see if that turns. Again, still to come, Gauffin on the men's side and Bolt on the men's side as well, tennis-wise. Okay, can I tell, since I didn't expect to have the Bobby Bonilla day thing lasts throughout the show, but I have a fantastic Bobby Bonilla story.
I think another reason why I kind of enjoy it, Gil, is because it sneaks up on me every year.
Me too.
Like, I never remember it's July 1st.
But we always get reminded.
Right. But we always get reminded.
Joe Pita, our buddy Joe Pita, who's a frequent guest on the show, friend, Joe Pita used to work for Mets owner Steve Cohen. So first of all, he points out, he goes, unlike the deferrals for Scherzer and Ohtani, which benefit the team, he says that the Bonilla deferral was pure idiocy back on the day on behalf of the Wilpons, the owners. That was also, he goes, see Bernie Madoff, as you almost certainly know. Yes, the Wilpons thought they were going to have money forever.
Yeah.
you know, with this Bernie Madoff genius that was making him all this money.
He's making him so much money.
So, like, what do we care if we defer this contract all these years? But Joe, friend of the program, of course, friend in real life. But Joe says he worked for Steve Cohen. He was in the planning inner circle of the Mets purchase when Steve Cohen bought the New York Mets. Joe took the opportunity to suggest to Steve Cohen that each Bobby Bonilla day, because obviously Cohen would be on the hook for this as well, that the Mets should turn an embarrassment into a marketing opportunity by giving a random fan the exact same $1.19 million check that Bonilla gets every July 1st until 2035. He suggested this to Steve Cohen. He's like, look, this is an embarrassment to the organization. It's $1.19 million a year. Let's turn this into this great, like, instead of a bobblehead day, give a fan $1.19 million.
I will give them some credit because I think they've kind of embraced the hilariousness of it a bit. But, like, this Joe idea, I mean, the PETA idea is just a genius marketing idea.
Well, Steve Cohen looked at Joe and said, quote, you want me to give away $1.19 million every year to a random fan? Long, awkward pause. You're an idiot.
It didn't need to be 1.1. Like, it could have been $1,100, right? Like, you could have taken away a comma or something.
By the way, for the record, Joe still feels like it's a great idea, and I think he's right.
I'm with him. I don't know if I was Steve Cohen, I'd be signing off on that much money either. But you could have done it like you could have done a quarter of it or something like that.
I just talked about going to the Giants Dodgers game in 10 days, 2 hours earlier for a Barry Bonds bobblehead.
Yeah. You imagine get on Amazon right now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great story from Joe.
You're an idiot. Welcome to the Mets. NFC East. Obviously, the NFL betting guide is out today. I don't think we've mentioned that four times yet today, but let this be the fourth. The NFL betting guide is out. And again, Zach Cohen and crew, Adam Burke and crew did such a great job on this. And every VSiN host is represented with their picks, divisions, conferences, who's in the Super Bowl. And not only that, every VSiN host has put in their favorite season-long prop bets or awards, whatever. It was left up to them. The NFL Betting Guide Pro Edition, our pro guide, includes previews of all 32 teams, best bets from VSiN hosts, player props and projections. Football special, by the way, $175 VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. So we talked a little bit about the AFC East yesterday, how the Bills of all teams in the NFL and all eight divisions are probably the lockiest of the locks to win their respective division. I'm going to go ahead and say that the NFC East, you ready for this? 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm feeling way confident, and I know a lot of people aren't. But I'm feeling way confident 1, 2, 3, 4 in the NFC East. Eagles, Commanders, Cowboys, Giants. Sorry, Dave Ross. Still got the Commanders ahead of your Cowboys. And I think, listen, a lot of the offseason narrative about Washington is justified, right? Washington won 9-1, talking about regular season and postseason. They won 9-1. Possession games. They were 9-4 though in one possession games. People tend to forget they also lost 4 one possession games, which I think it's interesting what the brain does, right? You have a rookie quarterback, Jaden Daniels. Some of the wins were so dramatic that they are emblazoned, right? In a way that other games last season, I think some Jaden Daniels stuff is more memorable than even the Super Bowl was, right? The Hail Miriam, of course, against the Chicago Bears. The dramatic win against the Eagles, the amazing Thursday night performance against the Bengals. What folks tend to forget is some of those 4 close losses, right? Pittsburgh leaps to mind for me, where Zach Ertz was an inch away from a first down and a game was winning field goal at that point, potential game winning field goal chip shot. So they were 9-4. By the way, in one possession games, the Eagles were 9-2. They won their fair share, 9-1 possession games, but people don't process it the same way with the Eagles because it's viewed as much more sustainable than Washington. And I agree with that, by the way. I still think the Eagles are the cream of that division. Their defense is leaps and bounds better than Washington's is. Washington addressed a lot of things, but defensively, they still have holes. So I definitely think they're second to the Eagles. I'm not that crazy. And we're still tush-pushing, right? That's how we settled that. We're still tush-pushing. That's still a thing. I just don't think the Cowboys can be. Could the Cowboys, by the way, win totals 11.5 for the Eagles, Washington's 9.5, Cowboys are 8.5, Giants are 5.5. I think the Giants are a distant fourth. Let's put it that way. I don't. If they don't win that October 5th game against the Saints, Kelly, good God, they may not win a game for a while. So I think the only question really to me is 2-3, and I'd still give Washington the edge over Dallas.
I think the one score wins is, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it is the, I keep going back, I keep thinking about the tweet we got about kind of the schedule notes for win totals and everything, and it's, I think a lot of this can be turned to say, hey, we talk a lot of the NFL during the summer, right? And futures bets and divisions and all this stuff that we're projecting. I think that's something, because what was it? The Vikings the year before, right? That had the great one score record at the end of 2024 or 2023.
I know where you're going with this.
Like, I think we end up overvaluing too much that's going to come back, you know, that's going to average out the next season. And when rosters aren't always the same, this isn't 3-point shooting in the course of an NBA game, right?
Right.
Well, one singular game, nothing's really changed. Rosters move, rosters change around, coaching staffs change. I'm not saying it's repeatable, but we shouldn't automatically think it's going to go the other way.
That's
you should
correct.
Mark up another win or loss 100%. For the Commanders.
100%. And the point I was trying to make is...
Random tangent there. But.
No. It's a great tangent. It's a great tangent. I also think it's interesting, and the point I was trying to make is what your brain retains.
Yes.
For
yeah.
some reason, the only thing that people retain of Washington's 9-4 and Philly's 9-2 is, oh, Washington won a lot of one-score games really dramatically. Yeah, they also lost a bunch of them, too,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I mean, in any which way you break that down, what you're saying is correct.
That was a little bit of a tangent there. You and I are both under on the Giants wins. Completely
yes.
with you that I think there is... I'm pretty confident Eagles win this division, which is, I think, a little weird hearing me say out loud a little bit, Gil, because I actually am fairly high on all three NFC East teams not named the New York Giants, that hence the part of the reason why the underplay on the Giants win total. The other bet I did make, I was considering, I'm not as strong as you on the 2-3 order. I think you should bet one of those exactas, though. Check out the 1-2-3-4 exacta in the division.
Yep. Sure should.
I'm not as confident Commanders, Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are being slept on a little bit from most people not named ESPN, obviously.
Yes.
the one bet I made on the Cowboys, so I took away the win total. I was looking over the win total. These props have started to pop up at some shops. Caesars, I bet over their total points scored for the season. So basically, I'm betting on the offense being good with throwing out how the defense is going to perform.
And you got more than $55 on that.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Cool. Did have to drive there, though.
A special numbers game investigation reveals that the Tour de France is this weekend.
Saturday.
If only we had an expert on named Drew Dinsick after the break. Oh, we do. That's next.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on the numbers game live from Circus, Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Meeting the Book, GV, New Jersey, New York, regarding Kelly's one-score game rant. I was at Ohio State for Urban Meyer's first year when they were bowl banned, but went 12-0. They went 6-0 in one-score games, and a lot of people talked that offseason about that being unsustainable. Ohio State's response was to score 40-plus each week.
That's
right.
A good plan.
You're right. It was completely unsustainable in the other direction. Jesse Welch, this new cell phone commercial with Zoe Saldana, where she's offering to dig through her purse to give the guy random junk, is ridiculous. Yeah, but it's Zoe Saldana. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wasn't complaining. Uh-huh. It was. I feel like it was during a sporting event, like March Madness or something. I was like, yeah, she's on like three different commercials all of a sudden.
Oh, she is milking it.
I don't have a problem with it.
I don't either. Marcus Ferdinand, I sprinkled on the Jays. Most wins in July, thanks to you guys. Great show. Well, we're not on the Jays, but I did mention that it was a team that I considered. And then lots of Bobby Bonilla stories still coming through from everybody. James Fessler, Pegula losing the same day as the NFL guide comes out. A coincidence? I think not. Sure hope she's okay reading it on the way home while planning the Bills Super Bowl after party.
You think we can get her a free one? We got to get her a free one.
I think she can fork it over.
Okay. All right.
Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us for a second segment. I want to get to NBA free agency because we just have a major move in the NBA. But real quick, let's just take a minute on this because the Tour de France is this weekend. Just reiterate your plays again, sir.
So the major market in this one is yellow jersey, which is your outright winner. It is a cumulative time over 3 weeks, 21 stages, and the favorite is is Slovenian cyclist Tadej Pogačar. Pogačar remains the greatest cyclist on earth, and his kind of warm-up numbers that he put out at the Dauphine from a power standpoint were eye-popping. He is almost certainly going to win this Tour de France. I would put his probability in the 80 to 85% range. I was looking all spring and early summer for reasons to believe that Jonas Vingegaard was going to be able to put up a challenge this year. He's got a better team or a deeper team on paper, but it does not look like he has narrowed the gap at all, even being a little bit healthier in this prep cycle. So Pogačar, likely winner as the départ, the grand départ, coming up this weekend. Timing wise, you're not going to really see major separation between the top two until like week two. So definitely worth kind of keeping an eye on prices to see if there is, you know, if Vindigo and his team make some noise in like the Pyrenees before they get to the Alps and Pogačar is saving it for week three, then you might be able to get in at a little bit better price down the road. But Slovenian's winning his fourth yellow jersey. Is Maya Jean.
What else do you look to bet in Tour de France, Drew? Like, is it stage by stage for you? Are there matchups? Is it over under times in stages? Like, how does it work?
Stage by stage betting is a thing, but it is full on throwing darts.
Yeah.
You don't really ever know what team's strategy is going to be in terms of who they're sending. Right. Like there'll be a breakaway on every given day. And unless you are kind of in the team meeting and you know who's going in the break and why, you know, you're never really going to have the insight to pick those off. If you are following closely with some of the news outlets in Europe, you will get word where a guy will do a press the day before and be like, we're going to win this stage tomorrow. Like we're going to do it. And you know, they'll be like nuggets that slide across the news feed like that. But when you're betting stage by stage or really just expectations stage by stage, you want to know what is the style of today's stage? Is it a hilly stage? Is it flat? Is it a mountainous climb? Is it a mountain stage where you're finishing at the top, or is there a technical descent at the end, right? Like those are sort of the factors that are going to inform what you would look to bet on a given stage. And most of the stage winners that are sprint stages, there's like five guys who could realistically win any sprint stage just because it's such a curated skill. I'll definitely bet into the green jersey market too, which is your points classification, which you get for winning stages across the breadth of the tour. So a lot of ways to bet it, but I'm mostly just in it for the views of friends.
Okay, to the NBA. This just came down. Our buddy Wyatt Tomchek here behind the glass, podcast extraordinaire producer, among other great roles here at VSiN. He is a Bucks fan and he is pumped. The Milwaukee Bucks have just signed Miles Turner after 10 years with the Pacers, and of course a run to the brink of an NBA championship, to a four-year, $107 million deal. Miles Turner, the latest free agent move in the NBA, and a big one at that. Give us your overview of NBA free agency thus far, your reaction to that.
Just to add on here, this is a developing story. The Bucks from Shams waiving Damian Lillard and stretching out the remainder of his contract over the next 5 years.
Whoa.
In order to make room for Miles Turner.
Whoa. Hey, thanks for your service. Sorry about that, Achilles. Wow. All right, Drew, your reaction to all that and free agency in general.
Yeah, wow.
that's a huge move.
wow, man.
Man, the Bucks are... I got to look at their finances.
That one's going to take a while to digest.
The next six years. That this team is in a weird spot. Weird roster. Miles Turner. My original thought was, boy, that's a lot of money for a guy who's probably going to just about to enter the decline of his career. But he is younger than I realized, even with as much service as he's had in the NBA. He's a pretty young guy. This might actually end up being a pretty fair deal for them. It's a younger, similar style of player as Brook Lopez, a little bit less rim protection, a little bit better shooting and offensive production. So, it's a more expensive maybe higher ceiling Brook Lopez. So, okay, good luck. I think the Bucks overall are still a team with way too many massive holes to take seriously in the Eastern Conference, even though the Eastern Conference is a joke. The big winners so far in free agency for me were the Nuggets first. The Nuggets moving MPJ and getting an asset like Cam Thomas was masterful. I did not have really any expectations for this front office when it was announced. I was like, okay, well, it's good luck, guys. But that was a really nice piece of work by them. I think the people are still sleeping on the Nuggets as being your second most likely winner of the title and the West. The market is still wildly hot on the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets are making moves like they don't really have a clear self-assessment. You kind of need other pieces other than what they are spending their money on. I'm not sure that they have anywhere close to the offensive ceiling that gets them a win in a series against a team with a Jokic or an SGA. Maybe even not enough to beat a win a series with a team that has a Curry or a Luka. So the Rockets, despite all of their spending, look to me still like a clear third tier in terms of title contention in the West. The Spurs, I thought, made some nice moves. No one's going to really stand up and take notice with the Luke Kornet signing. But efficiency wise, this year, Luke Kornet was the fourth best Celtic.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds crazy to say out loud. And that's the kind of thing where Charles Barkley's, the Charles Barkley quote comes to the forefront. And it's like, well, if the numbers say that Luke Kornet's the fourth best Celtics, then the numbers are stupid, but he's good. He's a really, really nice young player on the ascension. Overall, I think the Spurs are putting together a nucleus that's going to be, very clearly, a problem in the West, alongside the Thunder for years to come. So nice job by them. In the East, the only team that I've really kind of been taking notes on and impressed by has been the Atlanta Hawks. They have put together a really, really compelling young roster, and good nucleus. And there is a weird, very cool, kind of market wide, feeling about Trae Young. Apparently, Trae Young is a really good offensive player. You squint at the numbers and Trae Young and Jalen Brunson are effectively the same guy out there. And I don't really know why you would think that the Knicks are somehow likely to win the East thanks to Brunson, but the Hawks are not in the exact same position with Trae Young as their offensive anchor, considering all of the other pieces they now have around him who can do exactly, maybe even better job of fortifying his weaknesses defensively than what the Knicks can do for Brunson. So Hawks are going to be a problem in the East, I think, as a surprise for a lot of teams, just the way that team has been constructed. And, a lot of it depends on health. Jalen Johnson, I don't really know what to expect in terms of, how he looks coming back off that massive injury. Porzingis, who the heck knows if he's even available for more than a third of the season. But the Hawks were the biggest upgrader for me in the East by far.
Great breakdown, Drew, on all that. And then I want to say that Miles Turner, just to clarify, 29 years old, only 29 years old, which is interesting with NBA ages, because when Cam Johnson went to the Nuggets, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he's that old. He's 29 years old.
Yeah.
I said the same, same thing, same age. Drew, thank you so much. Appreciate it, man.
Awesome. You guys, best of luck. Enjoy the rest of Wimbledon.
Whale_Capper for all of Drew's stuff. Coming back with some MLB next.